Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Douglas Wilson and his brand of Christian nationalism have moved from the margins of discussion in civic life to the corridors of power in Washington, D.C.
Aaron Zittner, thank you so much for joining me.
Good to be with you.
So you are a reporter at the Wall Street Journal. You recently profiled Doug Wilson. Who is Doug Wilson and where did he come from?
Doug Wilson is the pastor of a church in Moscow, Idaho, spelled Moscow, but pronounced Moscow, who has formed a denomination, Reformed Calvinist denomination, called the Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches, or CREC. And he has been an evangelist and a clergyman in some regard for decades. But he's gotten a lot more attention recently, in large part because Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, is a member of this denomination and brought a pastor, his own pastor from a church in Tennessee. When Pete Hegseth was living in Tennessee, he joined one of these communion churches, brought a pastor in to preach during the workday at the Pentagon in the first of what Hegseth would be monthly sermons, has in turn raised the profile of Douglas Wilson. And Douglas Wilson embraces the term Christian nationalist, says this should be a Christian nation, has always been and should return to its roots as a Christian, Protestant Christian nation. And so, through Pete Hegseth, Douglas Wilson and his brand of Christian nationalism have moved from the margins of discussion in civic life to the corridors of power in Washington, D.C.
And what exactly is Christian nationalism? You know, what are they trying to pull off? What does that look like in actuality?
Well, the term Christian nationalism means different things to different people. Doug Wilson's version is a pretty assertive version of it. It's a vision in which both civic society, politics, law, and home life are governed by his version of biblical truth, revealed truth through the Protestant Bible. In the home, it means things such as something called complementarianism, which is that he believes that the Bible has assigned different roles to men and women, in which women's domain is the home, but women are subservient to their husbands, and men have a leadership role in the home. And in our political life, it means that Christian voices and views of law take precedence, and that abortion should be illegal, that the 19th Amendment, this is not a priority, but it's something he would support, the 19th Amendment that gave women the right to vote should be repealed. The basic unit of democracy is the household, in his view, and each household gets a vote. And since in heterosexual couples, the male would be dominant in the household, he would hold the ballot, and that the public square belongs to Christianity and allied religious faiths, which is to say that Muslims and Hindus can exist in our society, if it's a Christian society, as Doug Wilson sees it, but there are no minarets, there are no calls to prayer in the public square. The public square belongs to Christian voices.
Does every member of the CREC church, you know, believe everything that you laid out, or is that unique to Wilson?
I can't speak for every member of the church, but to be a member of the church in good standing, you're supposed to support the views of the church. I haven't heard anyone grill Pete Hegseth on his personal views, but presumably he's in alignment with them. I can't say I know that from reported fact. Doug Wilson, this past summer, this is a small denomination, maybe 150 churches. By contrast, the Southern Baptist Convention, which is the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S., has something like 46,000, 47,000 churches, as opposed to Doug Wilson's 150. But he did open one in Washington, D.C. over the summer.
Just steps from the Capitol, right?
Yes. And Pete Hegseth has attended that church on several occasions, including a few weekends ago when Doug Wilson was in Washington, Hegseth attended. And, you know, one of the doctrines in the founding documents of the communion is that women should not have a role in combat. And Pete Hegseth, until he became Secretary of Defense before that time, believed that women should not have a role in combat. He's modified his views since then, apparently. So I can't say that there's a perfect alignment, but the Pentagon says that Pete Hegseth is a member of a CREC communion church and appreciates many of the writings and teachings of Doug Wilson.
And so beyond Hegseth in MAGA world, who else is drawn to Wilson and the church? I know that he spoke at the National Conservatism Conference last year, and obviously there's a new church open in D.C., but does your reporting show that more people in MAGA world are drawn to the church beyond Hegseth?
Well, let's talk about Doug Wilson specifically, and then more broadly about religion in politics. This is a small denomination, but Douglas Wilson has been getting attention. And he's been given prominent platforms to explain his view of Christian nationalism. And I, as a reporter, take no position on Christian nationalism. My job is to learn what it is and explain it to the public. And we did a video that allowed Douglas Wilson to explain his views and to challenge them where appropriate and bring contextual information in. Tucker Carlson devoted one of his podcasts to Douglas Wilson. Charlie Kirk had Douglas Wilson before Charlie Kirk's slaying. Douglas Wilson was on the Charlie Kirk podcast, which is a very prominent, both of these are very prominent venues in the MAGA ecosystem and have thousands and thousands of listeners. Charlie Kirk, in turn, went on one of Douglas Wilson's podcasts. And a few weeks before Charlie Kirk was shot and killed, Douglas Wilson was in Phoenix, where Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk's organization, is headquartered, and he appeared on a Turning Point podcast, and he had dinner with Charlie Kirk. And you see, because of this attention in MAGA world, venues like Politico and the Wall Street Journal and others are writing about Douglas Wilson and giving him an opportunity to explain his views. And so they're really moving from the margins to be more well-known. And we should say that Douglas Wilson is a talented guy. He puts out a lot of content. He has high production values in his videos. They're very eye-catching videos that you can find online. And he's written many, many books. When I counted, he is affiliated with a publishing house called Canon Press, which he helped to found. And there are more than 50 titles under his name at Canon Press.
He was pretty fringe in the early 2000s, but as you just said, he did have this media operation, whether it was with Canon Press. I think he had a blog, maybe two, in the early 2000s that made him really popular. But can you talk about how he's embracing media today? You mentioned the publishing house, but also this podcast is really taking off, right?
I can't tell you I know how many people listen to his podcast. He still has a blog, and the blog has a video element to it. And he does a lot of eye-catching things with his media presence. Once a year, he does something called No Quarter November. And he takes the month of November, he says, and he says, in November, I'm going to give my unvarnished views of the world, about how the secular world has failed, and the only hope for preserving society is through my version of Christian nationalism. And in each of these announcements that he's about to spend November with a kind of unqualified, unvarnished view of the world, he uses literal fire. So in one of them, it starts with him having dinner with his family, and then an alarm goes off, and he goes off into his garage, and he straps on a flamethrower, and he uses the flamethrower to set on fire a bunch of symbols of the secular world, such as Disney princesses and oversized cardboard, I assume they're cardboard, maybe they're not, cutouts of the Instagram logo and the TikTok logo. And one that I thought was eye-catching is he's out sitting on a boat on a lake and talking about how here's November and I'm going to give my unvarnished view of the world. And as he's talking, he's casting his fishing line into the water, and he pulls out a bottle of vodka and he takes a swig of the vodka. Then he puts a wick in the bottle and he lights it on fire. So you have this burning wick in a bottle of vodka as if it's a Molotov cocktail. And he calmly lights a cigar off of the burning wick. Then he throws this Molotov cocktail into the back of the boat, and the boat catches on fire, and the flames start spreading and creeping up toward him. And he starts talking, he continues talking calmly to the camera, talking about how the secular world thinks that we're all flamethrowers, and you know, really they're the ones who are mistaken. And he's going to keep giving his unvarnished view of the need for this nation to turn back to Christianity, even if the world thinks he's an arsonist. And these are very eye-catching videos.
You mentioned he knew Charlie Kirk. At Charlie Kirk's funeral, Jesus Christ was invoked numerous times by numerous speakers. Is your sense that as the Republican Party charts towards 2028, that Christianity and Christian nationalism could be a real force in Republican politics moving forward?
I would put it this way. I'm very interested in voters as emotional beings and as social beings. We're the Wall Street Journal, so we will write a lot about the child tax credit or no tax on tips. And we can tell you who qualifies for the child tax credit and who qualifies for no tax on tips. And we can ask, gee, will Democrats support some of these tax provisions? Will Republicans support an extension of the elevated child tax credit? And we write versions of policy papers. But voters do not just act as rational beings that look at these policies we write about and pick a candidate because they think that they're going to economically be better off under one than another. To some degree, they do. But people are emotional. People are human. And group identity and emotion matter a lot in politics. And Donald Trump is very good at fortifying group identity. He has built the MAGA movement as something in a way beyond policy. It's a movement of people who have a cultural affinity and an unusual amount of identification with the president. And he's done that in a number of ways. I think when he says, gee, all the prosecutors are trying to prosecute me because they really want to prosecute you. They're coming after me because they're really coming after you. He's taking his personal legal jeopardy that he had in 2024 and exporting that onto his supporters and making them feel threatened. Today, you know, you could argue that with the killing of Charlie Kirk and him saying radical leftists did this, he's amplifying a sense of threat that he feels the radical left presents to his supporters. And I think all that fortifies their allegiance to him and group identity. There's nothing like feeling a physical threat to make you want to go to safety. And the safety is the MAGA movement for some people. And I think religion plays a part in that. I think religion is a form of identity that is playing a role in Republican politics. And when I look across the administration, I see Pete Hegseth adhering to this small Calvinist, Reformed Calvinist denomination. But I also see J.D. Vance, who believes in a certain kind of Catholicism, a traditionalist Catholicism that wants to return to the Latin Mass, which the prior Pope discouraged. He wanted a certain strong magisterial form of Catholicism. I see Paula White, the head of Trump's faith office, who preaches a prosperity gospel. She might not call it that, but others would, that have faith in God and you will get material, tangible benefits. These are three different forms of religion: Paula White, Pete Hegseth's alignment with Doug Wilson, and J.D. Vance. That I think these are three people in the administration who are putting religion forward as part of their political identity. And I think there is a certain merger of religion and politics that we're getting through them and other figures in the administration.
Has Donald Trump said anything publicly about Doug Wilson?
Not that I know of, not about Doug Wilson specifically. He certainly has said a lot about Paula White has elevated her, you know, by choosing her in both his terms to a position of prominence in the administration. And in the new administration, she has an office in the White House itself, which the White House Faith Office has not had a position in the White House until now. As far as I know, this office started under George W. Bush, but is more prominent now, I'd say.
And you met Wilson, you got to interview him. What was your biggest takeaway?
He's a very personable person. I enjoyed talking with him. He is he's someone who enjoys the give and take of discussion and debate. He wrote a novel that Christianity Today named the novel of the year in, I think, 2012 or 2013. Christopher Hitchens, the late public intellectual and journalist, was an anti-religionist, not just an atheist, but opposed organized religion, and wrote a book called God is Not Great, playing off of, you know, the idea that God is great. And he challenged anyone to debate him and to debate his proposition that religion poisons everything around it. Well, Douglas Wilson stepped forward in 2008 and 2009 and took up that challenge and engaged with Christopher Hitchens in a series of debates that became a book that they put out and became a documentary. So he's someone who enjoys the give and take of discussion and espouses these views that a lot of people would find to be on the fringe, but is very personable and amiable in expressing them. You might not agree with them, but he's not bombastic in his personal appearance. And, you know, he will entertain questions like, this is a nation that's become less oriented around religion. More people are disaffiliating from religion in recent years. We're a more egalitarian nation. Women are not as subservient to men as in the past. Women are much more independent, powerful actors in our economy. More women are managers than before. Women are in some ways out-earning men in some cities among young people, according to some data. Why should an America that is more pluralistic, less religiously oriented, and more egalitarian when it comes to gender accept this vision of Christian nationalism? He will, you know, entertain those questions and engage with them.
Aaron Zitner is the writer behind the Wall Street Journal's Doug Wilson profile. Aaron, thank you for joining me.
Good to be with you.